Good morning. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. In the last few days, a few days ago, I was on Facebook, which I do often, back and forth, and get into dialogues and different pages that I'm involved in. One of those is the Baltimore election page, and there was this interesting conversation going on about the Baltimore bike share program. It was fascinating watching the back and forth between people over this program. It's been awarded. The bike share contract has been awarded. And there were conversations on there about why wasn't it a Baltimore company? Conversations back, well, there's no Baltimore company that has the infrastructure to do this. And people going and saying, well, we can develop something here that's different with a co-op. And that was going back and forth. Issues of race were involved with the bike share program. It was fascinating, I thought, and a really important program because I think the idea of restructuring our transportation system is critically important, which is one of the reasons that I moderated all the transportation debates between the city council members and the mayoral candidates to wrestle with these issues. And one of those issues has to do with bikes and biking and making biking safe in Baltimore, which we've been talking about for a long time here on the program. And we thought we should get deep into what the issues are surrounding this conversation. And two of those people in that conversation were Liz Cornish, who was executive director of Bikemore, who responded to my email and said, yes, I'd love to come on. Liz is here. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
And she's been knee-deep in getting this bike share program started here in Baltimore. Christopher Irvin he's vice chair of the Committee of Concerned Citizens and running for the 5th District City Council seat. We won't get into that part of it, but we're good to have you on the air, Chris.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
And Chris was deep in that dialogue and responded to me when I raised the issues of the seeming racial isolation in this bike share program. That got in, so we asked Christopher to join us. Josh Keogh is with us, who's worker-owner of the Baltimore Bicycle Works, and that was mentioned in this series of articles because it had to do with, is there another model other than bike share? And good to have you in the studio, Josh. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Parag Kandahar is with us. He is a clinical teaching fellow at the Community Development Clinic, University of Baltimore School of Law, and deeply involved in building worker co-ops in the city and has a great deal to say about that. And Parag, welcome. Good to have you with us. Oh, Parag's not here yet? All right. Well, as soon as he gets here, we'll get him here. 410-319-8888 is the number for you to join in on this conversation. And you can also tweet us at Mark Steiner, log on to our Facebook pages, write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. We have one email from Betsy that we'll read in a moment with an interesting idea about an alternative to all of this. We'll see what our panelists think about that. 410-319-8888. So first of all, let me just start. Liz, so you have been like really at the heart of this campaign to bring bike share to Baltimore. So let me let you wax forth a bit on that.
So Bikemore is Baltimore City's premier bicycle advocacy organization. And when we formed in 2012, we set one of our major three priorities as bringing bike share to Baltimore. And so through our advocacy and working with our partners at Baltimore City Department of Transportation, we've been advocating for a system like this to come for some time. We know that the city has been working to bring the system for the last 6 years and has hit some bumps along the way. But we are really pleased with the way that they have responded to our requests in terms of technical specifications of the system and considerations and concerns about making the system work for Baltimore City and be responsive to its community. So we're excited for the launch in the fall.
Let me just come to the other ideas in here. This thing, so let's just describe what just happened with bike share to get people to understand where it is. And if I have this right, and correct me if I'm wrong. But what I understand is that, so it was $2.36 million.
Correct.
Right, a contract. That ended up going to a Canadian company?
Yes, Bouygues.
Bouygues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And bid out two other companies that were going to do it for less money, but that we can talk a bit about that.
So that's actually incorrect.
Well, that's the Sun reported.
So the Sun reported inaccurately. So I will say that the difference is that each company, the request for proposals process was interesting in that we were pleased that the Baltimore Department of Transportation did something that was innovative in the procurement process where they created a layer of technical review. So in order to even have their materials looked at as a vendor, they had to pass through a technical review, which we were able to have a couple of community members a part of. So it wasn't just city officials that were part of the technical review. once you pass the technical review, then you entered into the standard procurement process, which does require us to go with the lowest bid. But the technical review did have weight. Ultimately, what you see is that some companies, as reported, every company bid at the correct amount, which was around $2.3 million. When you see variances, that has to do with the types of equipment that was purchased and other technical specifications.
Right, but it is correct that Zagster came in at 2.33, which is less than Motivate. Far less.
But Zagster submitted a bid but then pulled out of the bid process.
Right, but I'm saying but they were less.
But they pulled out.
Right. I just want to be clear about that. That's all. So, Josh, talk a bit about what your group had to do with any of this.
So I am a worker owner at a cooperatively run bicycle shop in Baltimore, a sort of a retail and repair bicycle shop. We are involved in this just from the standpoint that we are interested party in terms of, we're happy that BikeShare is coming to Baltimore. We're excited that this is, a thing that is being talked about in a sort of transit and transportation context. We're only, minorly or tangentially involved in the, process from the standpoint that we were given, solicited by the city to, give a proposal to, bid for this. In our current structure, I don't think that we were terribly well prepared for that, but it is something that we explored because we are interested in what this means in terms of development for the city. And we were interested to see if we wouldn't be able to propose, a solution that would include worker ownership in terms of the implementation of a bike share system.
So, and Parag, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Happy to be here.
So Parag Handahar is clinical teaching fellow at the Community Development Clinic, University of Baltimore School of Law, and part of the Baltimore Activating Solidarity Economies base, which is pushing the idea of worker co-ops in Baltimore, and part of the arguments on this Facebook page had to do with this should have gone Baltimore. Though the argument that Liz Cornish and others were making was there was no company in Baltimore that had the technological capability to make this work. Very few companies do in this country or anywhere in the world. So what about the argument about how to make this a Baltimore-based economy? And we know that Boowiegan is also creating 80 jobs in the city. That comes with it as well. Parag?
Right. Just one quick thing that I'm no longer with the University of Baltimore Community Development Clinic.
Sorry about that.
No problem at all. But, anything that opens up transportation options for more folks in the city is generally a good thing, right? But we do have to think about what it means specifically for poor, for black, for, young, old, longtime Baltimorean folks, and newcomers. And I think there are some really great opportunities for, thinking critically about equity here. The idea of jobs is really, helpful, but, how are those jobs going to be structured? If they're thinking about, is there an opportunity to maybe have, community-based cooperative companies that are able to do some of the service work? Are there some ways in which, the bike sharing program can actually reinvest in Baltimore economies? There are some really amazing things that are happening in the city around, bringing, both like biking options and then also, thinking about how to, build out economic alternatives in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think the devil is really in the details here. You could even have an option to think about, is there any investment that the company is going to make into local communities? Is there any way in which to allow for membership to, for people who become members in this bike share, to actually invest in, a local co-op that is youth-led or that is, coming out of one of the local neighborhoods. So these are, you know, there are a lot of different ways in which this could be structured. We don't have to go with just like a, you know, traditional employment structure.
So let's and let me get Chris Irvin into this, and good to have you here. So because we got into this conversation around this issue as well, and as you're a serious biker, so let me let you leap into where you your analysis of all this.
Oh, I don't know about how serious I am, although
probably more serious than I am.
I live in the Howard Park section, and my girlfriend's actually a triathlete, and she's run marathons around the world, and so biking is a big issue within the household. I have a 10-year-old daughter who I'm proud to say I taught to ride her bike on a parking lot in Northwest Baltimore. But it caused me to look around my neighborhood and to think, what are some of the options or how safe is biking in my community? Now, I live in a very, a fairly rural type of community, mostly single-family homes, even if they're turned into apartments, a lot of tree-lined streets, and it's not safe to ride a bike. So when my girlfriend wants to ride her bike to train for an upcoming event, she has to put the bike on the car to go to Druid Hill Park. While I have access to Wabash, Liberty Heights, and Reisterstown Road, she has to put the bike on the car to ride to Druid Hill Park, where there is a bike lane. Almost, we have a highway to nowhere. We have a bike lane to nowhere. It stops. As you come out of Druid Hill Park, it stops on Liberty Heights before you cross over Pennsylvania Avenue. So when I hear the conversation of biking, I'm all for it. I think Bike More is doing excellent work. I'm glad that we're cognizant of this. We came back from the marathon in Berlin, Germany, where there are dedicated, protected bike lanes in a city of over 3.5 million people. If they can get it right, I think we I think that there are ways that we can explore, broaden this conversation. When we talk about downtown, I understand we have to start somewhere, but we're starting also where we have paddle boats, segways, we have the light rail, there's a lot of transportation, and again, we have to start somewhere, so I understand that. Let's also include other parts of the city where people need to use their bike for exercise, but also for transportation to work. You have a lot of areas, and I had the conversation with someone the other day, as they pulled up on their bike coming home from work on a construction site. He said, well, you care about bikes? I said, yeah, I ride a bike. You know, he said, where do you ride? I said, well, I ride on the trails and everything else. He said, well, I ride to work from my home right here where you're standing. I ride to work. So I want to know more about your efforts on biking, and I want to support that.
So let me get down to the heart of that. I'm going to come right back to this issue of how the Baltimore economy gets affected by this. And some people's ideas about how to make this more of a local economy thing rather than taking it outside and how that changes, but if that can change. But there was a report by the Federal Highway Administration that I was reading early this morning. And one of the things that they found in all the cities that they looked at across this country, whether it was Boston or Washington, Denver, numerous cities around the country that have these, and Milwaukee, that have these bike share programs, that they're almost exclusively in white neighborhoods. And that's the same in Baltimore. If you look at the place neighborhoods we're having that they're in Baltimore, the bike share programs are, and unless the sun gets it wrong again, are in Inner Harbor, Mount Vernon, Charles North, Jonestown, Fells Point, Holland's Market, Pigtown, Canton, Patterson Park, Mount Clair, Union Square, Federal Hill, Riverside, South Baltimore, and Locust Point.
So I would like to respond to that. I think one of the things that's really important to remember about bringing any type of new transportation option into any city, I think it's unfortunate that so much misinformation about the system has been allowed to permeate the conversation without really recognizing some of the real technical and logistical challenges that it does to require to launch a bike share system. Additionally, there has been no station map released, and I'm a part of the technical advisory committee that is part of working with the bike share vendor, Bowiegan, and the city, and a committee of technical advisors that consists of urban planners, city and state transportation employees, that we're going to be looking at analyzing where stations go. Now, let's be clear. Anybody that tells you that bike share is some sort of silver bullet for transportation equity is trying to sell you something. We know that looking at systems from across the country, that while departments are looking at creative ways to increase ridership among people of color and among low-income communities, that bike share has inherent challenges of making that be a real and viable option to addressing all the barriers to bicycling. That being said, one of the things that I will commend the city on is that part of the technical review of the bike share vendor, we're looking at ways to make bike share accessible to the unbanked, including a cash option, and making bike share be able to be checked out using the Charm card, making it a part of our local transit system. And so these are all possible through partnerships with, you know, organizations like MTA that really start to look at the issue. Now, one last point about station siting. Bike share is part of a system of urban planning and urban redevelopment that comes from a place historically that is problematic. It's part of a system, right? And Bike More works diligently to address issues of inequities in terms of looking at those issues. But the reality is that in order for bike share to work, the stations have to be sited close together. There are actual urban planning specific requirements that say you have to site, you know, NACDO just recently released specifications that said a density of 29 stations per square mile. So when you're looking at launching with 50 stations, you're looking at no more than 2 square miles of where stations are able to be sited. So the reality of in phase one of every neighborhood in Baltimore getting a bike share system, it's just not logical.
Except I hear that. Anybody want to jump in? I'd like to hear your thoughts. It's just not just about me. I want to have other people's ideas about this. But it seems like this has been the pattern in every city in America. And once it starts, it never changes.
And that's also not true.
That actually is true. If you look at what happened in Denver, look what happened in Milwaukee. Philadelphia is the only city I've studied in America that actually has a plan from the beginning that includes poor communities of color. The only city I've seen so far that actually includes poor communities of color in the planning and in how they're going to start the program by doing things that, as you said earlier, have nothing to do with credit cards.
I think there's a lot of transportation planners across the country and folks that work on bike share and bike advocates that would respectfully disagree with you, Mark.
Well, I'm going from the federal government's report itself that looks at all these cities and what they've done. I mean, there's still a big battle in Denver over this at this very moment and in other cities around the country.
I don't think anybody's arguing the point that bike share primarily serves white audiences. I don't think anybody would argue that.
So in a 63% black city, why should people care about bike share?
So in a 60% black city, here's why people should care about bike share. Because bike share is critical to normalizing biking and removing some of the barriers to bicycling. Bike share, and everybody that knows me and knows my work on a national level would know that I am very skeptical of bike share's ability to remove barriers of biking and people of color. It's just not it's a square peg round hole when you're talking about issues of transportation equity. However, there are things that bike share does that I think will begin to start the conversation about introducing biking as a viable mode of transportation in communities where the idea of biking to work is not seen as a badge of honor, but as a point of shame. And so when you start to normalize something like biking, and when you start to have increased demand for biking that increases the amount of protected facilities throughout the city, what you see is an increase in ridership across the board, whether or not people are using bike share. And so what we're most interested in terms of what bike share can do for biking, particularly when it comes to removing barriers of biking to low-income communities or people of color, is that it normalizes biking, it creates biking as a viable mode of transportation that directs more local resources to get more bike facilities built.
So before we get to the phones of 410-319-8888, Michael, you're the first caller up. We're going to come to you. Please, folks, jump in. Your other thoughts on this, Chris, and then I'm going to go to Parag and
I'm hearing the conversation, and I, like I said, I think the bike advocates are necessary. I'm here to say that there is definitely a need in the larger community because that starts the conversation. The bike share, let me stay closer. The bike share conversation begins an attitude around biking. I want to make sure that doesn't become an elitist attitude so that it only in New York City. Bike share is predominant in lower Manhattan in that Chelsea area. Right. It doesn't seem to make it to Harlem. It doesn't seem to make it to the Bronx in congested areas where it would be perfect on Fordham Road near Fordham University. So you have the same
spoken
kind of
like
climate.
A New Yorker.
But so my point being is exactly what the point that you're making. So I think as opposed to being two separate conversations, it just
right.
needs to be a more inclusive conversation, because inevitably it ends up being the point that you're making, that it becomes another kind of enclave of elitism when we talk biking, and we don't picture that person riding a bike with a construction helmet on their back going to work, or the black guy just going to the basketball court riding his bike. We don't picture that. We picture different people riding bikes in different scenarios. And that's my biggest thing, is that there are other communities in Baltimore that have the same density as downtown, they have the same need as downtown, but they're not quite being included in the conversation the same way.
And Parag, let me let you jump in, then we'll go to Josh and open the phones here.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think that it's not either or. I think, you know, in Baltimore we have that, you know, somewhat peculiar, you know, thing where we don't talk about race when we should be talking about race, you know, and building it into the conversation from the get-go, from the ground floor. And so, the idea that, you know, we only have a few, we have to think about density, and we have to think about, you know, how many stations we need in a mile. Like, what is that mile? You know, why not east-west, right? What are the ways in which we can expand this? And then also think about, you know, how do we get this company to invest? And, you know, what are the ways in which to invest directly into the local communities, and I think that, you know, there are a lot of opportunities here, but we really have to, that has to be built into the plan and baked in right from the beginning. And if we don't talk about it explicitly, if we don't talk about it right now, then I think, Mark, you're right. I mean, you know, the track record shows that it just doesn't happen. And I want to mention that there's a program in Richmond, you know, California, called Rich City Rides. It's a worker-owned co-op, actually, that, you know, has done all kinds of work, specifically within low-income communities, specifically within black communities. You know, and when people have access, people ride, you know, and I think that is, you know, shown, you know, again and again, and shown around the world. It's just a matter of really thinking creatively about how to actually, you know, build this access in, you know. And we have, again, like, amazing projects, like the Baltimore Youth Kinetic Energy Collective, Velocipede, you know, Baltimore Bicycle Works, that could really, build out access, I think, you know, with investment. And I think it does turn, you know, on investment. And, you know, this company's, you know, going to actually, you know, do well. And why can't we use that, you know, to build, you know, more equity in the city?
That's an interesting one. We'll come back to that idea. Let's go to Josh here. Josh Kehoe.
Yeah, and I just wanted to piggyback on what Parag was saying in terms of, you know, this notion of trying to, you know, bake in our values at the onset, I suppose. I think that we're talking about an industry that is, you know, a growing and emerging industry, and, you know, I think we're talking about the jobs of the future in terms of our city. And, you know, I think that you know, the Bouygues, the company that was awarded the contract, I think is largely effectively going to be a sort of technology provider. And they have, it seems like, according to like news reports, a preferred, you know, company that's doing the implementation, which is this company called Core Logistics. And I think that if we're talking about like what, you know, my concerns would be moving forward, I'd like to see, you know, that Core Logistics, if nothing else, sign a, you know, a sort of like neutrality agreement with the city, with Bouygues, with the transit workers union, to make sure that these are going to be good jobs, that these are going to be jobs that are, you know, that the citizens of Baltimore deserve to have. And you're talking about an industry that is seeing growth in organized labor, you know, unlike many other industries in the past 10 years. I mean, maybe you could be talking about like, you know, digital, you know, news organizations. But other than that, I think bike sharing is it. And D.C. just, I think, last year maybe signed a union contract. New York has got a contract. Boston's got a contract. So I think that, you know, I have some concerns that if this is a company that's, you know, based in Alabama, that they might not be as friendly to organized labor as others. That's not based on any knowledge of the organization, but it's certainly something I think that people who are talking about implementation should be talking about.
So, what everybody has said here, I mean, so it's interesting we approach this, I think, the way all of you are kind of describing here. Is, if we take this as the beginning, And they won't be here till the fall, really getting things started, that there's an opportunity here to start laying some groundwork for a different way of doing things in this city with this company than has been done in other places.
And I would just like to respond to say that having been with this particular team at the Department of Transportation, so keep in mind that this is a project that the DOT has been trying to launch for 6 years, but this particular team, Veronica Macbeth at the head of transit, Jay Decker that was hired this year as the bike share coordinator, and Caitlin Duin, the bike ped planner, they are new employees to DOT, and they bring with them a level of expertise and thoughtfulness to the planning of bike share. So when we say, why isn't this baked in? Why aren't we talking about race? We have been having those conversations. I've been at those meetings, and I wouldn't have been at those meetings if we weren't talking about those things and if we weren't talking about these specific issues of bike equity. That's why the vendor selected was somebody that could come to the table with the technology to include things like Charm City Card. That is innovative. There are very few bike share systems across the country that integrate with public transit in that way. And so I just want to be clear that, like, there's no disagreement on my part. Even in the early phases, I sat down with Josh and his team at Baltimore Bicycle Works to talk about some of the unionizing aspects, because I was in D.C. working with the Capital Bike Share workers when the Transit Workers Union was there trying to organize them. So I think this idea that we're not all having the same conversation, or that the city is not having the conversation that everybody else around the table is false. Now, I will say the challenge is communicating that out externally. And that's what you're going to see over the next 6 months. There's going to be diligent amounts of community outreach to get people understanding what the system is and what it isn't and what it can do and what we have left to do in terms of investing and engaging in communities to make sure that people feel like biking is for them.
But I think part of what you're saying here, I think that's we can take a quick break here and come back. But I think that there's a sense that folks in the bike community don't use bikes. And they bike as much, if not more, than most other communities, because folks in the poorest bike communities don't have cars and actually do ride bicycles all over the place. I mean,
right.
and so I think that, you know, and so it's not like it's like getting people to learn how to want to ride bikes. People do ride bikes. It's a question of, and I think in the beginning, of how many people in that community are actually at the planning table from the beginning. About where this goes, I think that's part of the question. And then, how do you develop that? I mean, how do you take it to so that the bike share is at the Mondawmin subway stop, and not just at a downtown subway stop? I mean, that you know what I'm saying. That I mean, those are the kind of conversations people want to.
I think a good start, which would be okay.
Hold that thought. I'll come right back to you, Chris, and Parag, and we have a lot of callers calling in. So, Michael, Bill, Ali, we're going to come to all your calls as soon as we come back from this break. Hear what Chris and Parag have to say. Jump to your calls, Michael, Bill, and Ali. Stay with us, 410-319-8888. We're talking about the promise and the future of bike share in the city of Baltimore, what it means for all of us. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're talking about Baltimore Bike Share, which is about to come to Baltimore, what that promise might mean. Christopher Irvin is here with us. He's vice chair of the Committee for Concerned Citizens, chair of the Economic Development for Roots of Scouting, a really important group in our community, I think.
Thank you.
It is. Liz Cornish, who is executive director of Bikemore, Josh Keogh, who's worker owner at Baltimore Bicycle Works, Parag Kandahar, who is principal in Gilmore and Kandahar LLC, which is a social justice law firm in our community, and you at 410-319-8888. So can we have like a full bank of callers? I do want to get to all of them. You were going to say what, Chris?
I don't know if Liz and the team have considered this, but just as a way to expand the scope of this a little bit, you mentioned Mondawmin, and I mentioned the bike lane that comes out of Druid Hill that runs through Druid but stops right before you get to Mondawmin. I think an inexpensive way to begin some of the outreach is just to provide parking stations at Mondawmin. Again, after being in Berlin, like, my whole view has changed. There were massive parking stations. I don't even know how people knew where their bike was, but because they're used to it. They were made used to it. So when lanes came and everything else, I'm sure it was an easy adaptation for them. So I think when you have a hub like that, to not have bike parking, you know, it kind of just says, okay, let's just start with the parking, and then we can explore other things like the share and everything else.
And you, Parag, I'll let you jump in real fast and we'll open the phones.
I think, you know, the point about who's you know, who's at the table. I mean, I think that, you know, implementation is going to take some time. I think there's some really great opportunities. I do think that, you know, innovative thinking around, you know, I think it's great that, you know, it's going to connect to the public transportation system. And I think it would be really great to, you know, think about how people who sign on early, you know, might be able to invest, you know, in some way using the payment system to, you know, potentially invest in reuse programs or, you know, access to bike, you know, programs, you know, somewhere, some way through this system, you know. And how do we hold the vendor to, you know, investing directly in Baltimore because it's not a Baltimore company? And how do we do that beyond thinking about just the jobs? And jobs are great, but what about, you know, some more substantive way? And there's a whole range of different possibilities, you know, maybe some that we haven't seen anywhere. So I think it would be really great to have more people, you know, part of that conversation around equity, you know, not only transportation equity, but economic and racial equity within the city, you know. And, you know, it's one thing to have parallel conversations, it's another thing to actually integrate the conversations. And that I think, is an issue that we have in the city around health, around food, around all kinds of things, right? That people have conversations, but then, you know, who's at that table? And so that, I, you know, this isn't an accusation. It's just that there are great opportunities to actually build real innovation and to, you know, connect with the stuff that's happening, at, you know, on the ground, like with you know, communities every day. And I would contest that that conversation is happening.
I think that it's an interesting point. I think we're at a place in Baltimore where I think many people are raising the issue of how we do things differently. Now that we've got something like bike share coming, how do we create something within that and around it and through it that is completely inclusive and changes the nature of what other cities do, taking models from Berlin, Richmond, California, wherever else we want to take them? I think it's a really interesting point. Let me see what our listeners are thinking at 410-319-8888. And let us go to Bill in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Yes, Mark, first let me just say hello to everybody.
Good morning.
But I guess my question, because when you first started, you was asking the lady about the contract, and I know she said that a Canadian company got it, and she was saying something about somebody else was a lower bidder. And she said that they tore it down. And I would just like to know, why would somebody that's going to bid lower, that has the skills to do it, why would they pull it down?
Well, I think, Liz, you probably answered that pretty well. You can do it real quickly again. I think lower is not always better. I mean, that's partially true, I think.
Yeah, so there were six RFP proposals that the city entertained. Ultimately, they, through the technical review, they asked to interview four companies: B-Cycle, Zagster, Beweegan, and Motivate. When they asked to interview Zagster, which was the company that you quoted, the day before their interview, they opted to pull out of the bid process. So they became non-viable. So I think when you're looking at what ultimately differentiated the three remaining vendors that both passed the technical advisory committee and the layers of our procurement process that we have to go through as a city, what the city has responded to as why they picked Beweegan over another company was, first, their ability to bring the pedal assist, the Pedelec bike technology to Baltimore. This is a direction that all bike share companies are headed in developing this technology, and they're able to bring it to Baltimore this year, whereas other companies, it's still a few years out in terms of R&D. And then secondly, was their ability to partner with their core logistics company that does operations, that once they reach full maturity, they're going to be building 80 local jobs. And they've already developed a partnership with Baltimore Station that works to provide jobs to veterans to make sure that is one of their workforce development partnerships.
Actually, yeah, formerly addicted veterans. This is Baltimore Station, yeah. 410-319-8888. Allie, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. A couple of things. First of all, I'm glad they got the pedal assist bikes. People are, you know, disabled, and some people can't, you know, ride a regular bike. Also, people have, you know, kids, and also, you know, it's not just getting to work. It's, you know, getting to the store, picking up kids, getting them places. And in the meantime, they are cutting the bus service by, like, more than half. So the idea that this is going to take up, you know, that slack, and that there's all this energy into the bikes when, no, you know, when there's not the same kind of energy into giving us, you know, more frequent bus service instead of changing the map and taking away buses, which is just incredible to me. I just think the energy's in the wrong place.
Well, I will say, just to everyone's comment, they can, Chris. I mean, I think that the thing with that is that Baltimore has little control, unfortunately, over the buses. It's a state issue. We can fight it, and they are going to fight it, I think. But they do have control of things like this, and with the MTA actually controls this world.
Yeah, I agree with the caller that they should not be reducing buses.
Absolutely.
I think, again, comprehensively how we look at transportation. So while D.C. and right over inside of Anacostia just got the trolleys in, you know, we're tearing up the trolley line. And I'm not saying that we should have reused the old trolley lines, but the whole way we think of the whole way we think of transportation inclusively, you know, how I used to run up and down Edmondson Avenue and North Avenue. We got rid of that while other places are going back to it. We just don't look the same way at the connectivity between the populations in outer Baltimore to the ability to get to inner Baltimore, even as we want to bring more business to inner Baltimore.
I will say to you, one of the interesting things about this project, which is small. I mean, when you're talking about transportation dollars, $2.3 million, not a lot of money. But in this particular instance, this has created an opportunity for us to repair some of the relationships with state transportation agencies. MTA specifically is providing $500,000 as part of their B-Link program to make sure that stations like Mendelman and across the city have adequate bike parking and bike infrastructure.
Roger Station, I just got to say that now because it's in my neighborhood.
Yeah, and then also helping to invest in the capital in terms of making sure that there are stations at Transit Center. So I think I totally agree with the caller. We don't need to be looking at this as, but again, this is an opportunity where the city does have an opportunity to invest their own dollars and improve one aspect of the transportation system. But I don't think there is a single person that is supportive of the bike share system or biking in general in Baltimore that would ever think that this is an adequate, this is not a replacement of what would be a comprehensive public transit system, which the city so desperately needs and that we're on the front lines advocating for on a daily basis.
We haven't had for decades. Let me go back to the phones quick. Greg.
And I just wanted also to say that, you know, in terms of how we're investing our money, I think that, you know, bicycles as transportations are, you know, as transportation is the most energy efficient, you know, lowest pollution way that you can be getting around in an urban environment. And, you know, it's not an either or question, but I think it's a question of envisioning what transportation looks like in the future of Baltimore City. And I think if you're doing that without picturing a lot more people riding bikes, it's not a terribly pleasant picture.
410-319-8888. Let's go to Mary. You're on the air.
Yeah, I have two comments. I think that your point about minority park is very well received. I myself, as a Caucasian female, love to bike, resigned from a biking community because of its a lack of representation of minority. Where are the minority bike clubs? Why are they not at the table? My second comment is, has thought been given to an information ID system on every bike throughout Maryland, this option, this sticker, that in the case of an emergency, this number can be fielded into software that can identify the owner and contact the emergency person listed. I would pay for them a nominal fee, and that would generate income. It would also help us keep track of how many bikes might be on our roads in Maryland. I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you so much for emphasizing biking in Maryland.
Thank you so much, Mary, for your call. There's a lot of callers here, but let me get back. Parag, do you want to jump in? We haven't heard from you in a few minutes.
I think on the caller's point, I mean, I wouldn't be able to talk about the, you know, the ID, but I think that, you know, there are, you know, again, like there are really great collectives, and I think, you know, I can't say that, you know, the folks haven't, you know, been spoken to, but I think that it would be really great to bring people to the table to talk about what actual implementation looks like, right? And I think that, you know, there's some really innovative thinking that's going on now in the city, you know, again, around a whole range of different topics. And, Mark, you've had, you know, different people, you know, talking about the food system and about, you know, a range of other
possibilities around, you know, redefining what work looks like as well. And, you know, this is, you know, one of those opportunities. Like, you know, I wouldn't want it to seem like this is not a good thing. It's good to have more options in the city, but how do we broaden this conversation, you know, and think creatively, right? So a fee-for-service that, you know, some folks would be willing to pay could then, you know, be invested in, you know, other opportunities, you know, perhaps, you know, training young people in the city as the Bike Collective is doing, as Velocipede is doing, as, you know, Baltimore Bicycle Works and some other projects like Bearings used to do, you know, on bike repair, on maintenance, you know, to bring them into this economy, right, and to spread, you know, some of what is coming in, you know, to more of the communities that could use it.
Right, if that, in fact, becomes a part of Baltimore's economic future, biking in a very large way,
that's right,
then that becomes really important, you know, as a place where young people can actually learn how to fix, repair, build bikes and create a whole economy around that. I mean, that's a big piece of this, and we have to make sure that it becomes inclusive from the beginning, and which, you know, which is, has not happened anywhere else, and we just make sure that happens here.
Go ahead, Liz. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to respond and say that, you know, he said, I can't speak to if these people have been talked to, but I can. You know, I mean, I work with folks at Bike. I work with folks at BBW. I work with folks at Velocipede. You know, I was at the Greater Mendelman Coordinating Council just last week at a meeting talking to folks there about a project that we're doing called Plan for Health, which is bringing Center for Disease Control dollars to Baltimore to really look at improving connectivity from the neighborhoods that border Druid Hill Park to improve the bike access and so and the biking and walking access to that park. So I think I just want to be clear that these points are excellent points, and I want them to be part of this conversation because it's what matters to our organization. But I also want to make sure that people have an opportunity to know what has already happened so that we don't necessarily continue to have these conversations in silos, that we can build on the work that's been done, make it better, bring more people to the table. I don't think you will ever see any pushback from that. And then I also want to think clearly about thinking more broadly. I love that. I love that idea. Like, let's broaden the conversation. And I think one of the things is that we know that the ultimate way to make bike share for everybody is to get more bikes, and that costs a lot of money. Meanwhile, we're here, you know, debating the efficacy of a $2.3 million contract when a huge TIF is on the table for a company like Under Armour.
Don't worry, that's our show tomorrow.
Yeah, and so I'm just saying. So I'm just saying that, like, you know, we have people in Baltimore that have the money right now to make it much more than 500 bikes. This is what the city and state, through our limited resources, we're able to cobble together. And so if people want bikes for everybody, we need to be asking and putting that onus on the people that have the ability to move that conversation forward.
Betsy actually wrote in saying, for $2.5 million, could we just buy bikes for everybody in Baltimore and be done with it? Which is...
I think that it is a slightly more complicated than that, but I do think that it's an interesting question in terms of, like, you know, how are we actually allocating our resources? What does the future look like? Why are we, you know, sort of limited by, you know, what other cities have been able to do successfully? So I don't think it's necessarily an actual solution necessarily, but I do think that it's an interesting question. I think that, for instance, I'm really excited about the, you know, electric assisted, you know, motorized bicycles. I think that anything to lower the barrier of entry in terms of people getting on a bicycle,
right,
is a good thing.
Right.
But it's certainly also a thing that's going to be increasing the cost of both bicycles and the program. So I think that it is a question. Do we want, you know, three bicycles, or do we want one bicycle that can be electric assisted? I don't think it needs to be an either or, but I do think that these are open questions and things that we need to be thinking about.
Let me go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. There's a tweet in from Theodore who tweeted in, I saw a lot of black folks riding bikes in Philadelphia. It really was impressive. And I say that Mayor Nutter in Philly is the one city I've seen around the country that has from the beginning involved poor African-American Latino communities in the planning of bike share, in the process from Jump Street. that kind of designed how it would become a system that includes all the communities and not just a few. And I think that it's an example in Philly we should really look at. I mean, I think that they're doing an amazing job in terms of how they're planning what they're doing in Philly. And we're on the mark to doing it here. We just need to do the same thing here.
One conversation I've been having previously, actually with Liz, we discussed the issue of reentry, criminal justice reform. These are big conversations. And sometimes our conversations, again, that word connectivity, how we need to connect this particular conversation of biking to that conversation. You have people who are going to come home from serving time, and they are disconnected from their family, but they have to work, and they may live in a place that doesn't necessarily have access to public transportation. So we were discussing some type of bike share, if not this particular program, something that with the help of someone like Josh, so this you facilitating this immediate conversation is awesome too, but we need to look at how do we make this something that we can reach into that reentry community and say, here, we want to provide a service that you can take part of that's, again, that leads to that healthier lifestyle, the whole cognizance of an alternative form of transportation. And so I just wanted to bring that up now since we're sitting here. And again, Liz made me aware of some of the logistical issues that we'll have to tackle. But thank you to Bike More for wanting to be a part of that.
And I want to piggyback off that, if I could, really quickly.
Go ahead, Parag.
That is such a great point. And, you know, like, this is where we can think really creatively, right? So there's a, you know, organization that's doing incredible work in the Bay Area called Mission Asset Fund, which is helping folks to build their credit. If they have, you know, some issues that have happened with their credit in the past. So, you know, a creative, you know, option here is that somebody who's participating in this program in some way could actually have their payments, you know, in the membership maybe, you know, be counted toward their credit score. You know, I mean, there are like a whole range of different integrated, you know, kind of options that may actually turn the program into something, you know, broader. And we're not like trying to, you know, think of how many things we can piggyback off of this, but this is, when you have different people in the room with different perspectives, you know, all kinds of different possibilities are, you know, can come from that. And so it's great, you know, to have this program coming in, but like, let's think about, you know, innovative and kind of creative ways in which to build, you know, from there. So.
This very quickly, I want to get back.
I just wanted to say, you know, in terms of what the city's been able to do, you know, recently the city sent a handful of employees to Philadelphia. People for Bikes, a national bike organization, did a conference basically on bike equity and bike share. And so they sent employees to Philadelphia to sort of convene with people from across the country. And then also, you know, knowing that we've been working very closely with, you know, organizations from across the country that have grappled with these issues. These are amazing technical solutions to some problems that we face in Baltimore. But let's be clear, they're not going to fix everything. But I think what is exciting to me about this transportation conversation is that because of the people in the room, it lends itself to having these intersectional conversations in a way that, frankly, in Baltimore, talking about public transit hadn't happened prior to this, which is key.
There's a lot of callers here, so let's try to get as many as we can in here. Let's go very quickly to our callers. We only have a few minutes left. I want to get our guests a chance to kind of wrap up their thoughts. 410-319-8888. Chuck, quick thought. Go ahead.
Hey, Mark, love the show.
Thank you
for always bringing interesting and intellectual points to the radio for people to talk about.
Thank you.
Really quick, with the bike share, it's a great idea, but the one gentleman earlier said he'd been to Berlin, and with California, I think, or Berlin, I'm not sure which part, but you said that it's not, some areas it's ingrained and it's woven into the fabric of their city. And Baltimore's not that city. It's a great idea. It's I love the descriptions of what you guys were talking about of how to do it and implement it. It's a very high-tech item for a very low-tech city. You have a major urban population in this city that's not interested in things like this. And if you put it out there, if you don't roll this out in small phases to kind of see how the city will receive it, you're going to wind up throwing 500 bicycles out there and wasting a lot of somebody's money. And that needs to be considered when you do this. If you roll it out in small phases in different pockets of the city to kind of get the feel of, hey, how is this being received by the people, by the citizens of the city, it'd be a good litmus test to find out exactly if this is something that
Baltimore City is even capable of doing.
Chuck, appreciate the call. Greg, a quick thought.
Yeah, the primary bar to more people cycling in Baltimore City is that they don't feel that the conditions are safe. So we absolutely need to expand the infrastructure. And the city does have a plan to create a West Side bike network that is in the works. But one of the best things you can do to make cycling more safe is to put more cyclists on the road. The more bikers that are out there cycling inside of all the other traffic, the safer it is for everybody. So having a vigorous bike share system in the city will help all the cyclists, even if they're not using it. So even if there is not a station in your neighborhood, as you cycle across downtown, say, you will be made safer by the fact that all these bikes are out there.
Let me get something. So we have time for the caller. We will. Let me go around quickly. In the late 60s, early 70s in Amsterdam, there was a unique bike share program that cost no money. It was run by the provost. There were thousands of white bicycles all across Amsterdam. All you do is jump on the bike, ride it, get off it. Someone else saw the bike, got on it, rode it. There were thousands of white bikes, and that just meant bikes for free for you to use. Nobody stole them because nobody knew what the white bike was about. That was an interesting way to do it that didn't involve technology and didn't involve a lot of money and didn't involve a lot of anything. Of course, Amsterdam's also a bike-riding city. Closing thoughts.
I just had to respond to your caller who said that bike share would be a high-tech option in a low-tech city. I think bike riding, period, is one of the most low-tech forms of transportation other than skateboarding and actually walking. So the whole infrastructure around actually taking the bike out, that's one conversation. But again, we're just talking about returning to biking, and as far as getting the mentality wrapped around biking, until you start doing it, it will never be ingrained. So I think this is a good place to start. Again, we need to broaden the conversation. So I agree with
Parag Kandahar.
Yeah, I just think, anything that increases transportation equity is good generally. I think that, we have to talk about the specifics, really applaud the work of folks who've been working on this for a long time. But I think that there are really great, possibilities here, from everything from, worker-owned, options, for the jobs, as well as, getting some, more resources directly into the communities, that could benefit from, more options like this.
Quick closing thought, Liz Cornish.
I think my closing thought came after the press announcement last week, when after the cameras left and there was a lot of different city employees and different stakeholders, a really diverse group of people in Baltimore, many of who are not regular bike riders. And as we were taking some time to test ride some of the new bikes around, it was just really powerful for me to see the smiles reach across people's faces and talk about how fun it was and about how they never thought about biking to work, but that this would make them do that because it was so fun. And so I think there is this other part about bike share that we just didn't get to talk to, which is that it creates an access to the joy of bicycling, which can do a huge thing to uplift our city. And you get to see your city more, you connect with people on the street more. And so that's what makes biking a good thing for the city. And bike share will bring more bikes to more people.
Josh Kehoe.
I just wanted to emphasize that, we're talking about the future of this city and that the bicycle, I think, is at the sort of forefront of human technological achievement right there next to, like, the book, for instance. And I think that, you can't be talking about how people, human beings, get around in an urban environment in the future unless you're talking about bicycles. And I think that when we're talking about creating jobs, we need to be talking about creating worker cooperatives and worker ownerships. And if we're not talking about that, at a minimum, we need to be talking about good union jobs that have got a contract that mean that these jobs are going to be here and that we're not relying on, press releases and platitudes from people who are out there to make profit.
And it's very clear from the show today that so many of our listeners are really into this. Phones were really ringing today to talk about the future of biking in Baltimore. So we're going to keep on this. And push as we should do to make sure that it's inclusive of the entire city of Baltimore. and that we build new economic models in the city that put people to work. And I want to thank all of our guests for being here. Josh Kehoe, worker-owner at Baltimore Bicycle Works. Liz Cornish, executive director of Bikemore, the leading part of bringing bike share to Baltimore. Christopher Irvin, vice chair of the Committee for Concerned Citizens, chair of economic development for Roots of Scouting, and a candidate for the 5th District City Council, Parag Kandahar, who is a principal in Gilmore Kandahar, which is a progressive social justice law firm in the city of Baltimore. Thank the four of you so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a very short break, and when we return from this break, we're going to take a look at what seems to be two Americas in the face of this general election. Maybe it's more than just two Americas. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with us.